9:40 a.m. Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden has said he's optimistic that a deal will be reached to avoid the U.S. defaulting on its debt, but the House Speaker doesn't share that optimism.
I'm Stephen Portnoy at the White House. On the eve of another meeting here between the president and congressional leaders, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy describes himself as fearful about the state of talks.
They're not going well at all. There's no progress that I see.
McCarthy tells reporters the staff-level talks merely amount to aides moving ideas back and forth. President Biden has indicated it's still his plan to leave Washington on Wednesday for the G7 summit in Japan.
Near a park in Farmington, New Mexico, a police call for help as heard on Broadcastify.
Be advised, I got several people down. I've got three vehicles that are, I got three people that are dead as well.
In addition to the three dead, at least seven have been injured in today's mass shooting. This woman heard a commotion.
I went outside to see what was going on, and then I just heard multiple rounds start going off.
Police say officers fatally shot the 18-year-old suspect. No word on a motive. A man named Juan Ca Tran Pham is under arrest after allegedly attacking two staff members with a metal baseball bat at Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly's office in Virginia. CBS's Scott McFarland reports the assault comes amid a sharp increase in threats to lawmakers over the past few years.
Police say they found and arrested Pham before he left the complex. He faces two charges, including aggravated malicious wounding. In a statement, Congressman Connolly called the attack unconscionable and devastating. The episode follows last year's violent assault of then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul.
What is going on right now?
Beaten with a hammer by an intruder in their San Francisco home.
The FBI has criticized over its investigation into alleged collusion between Donald Trump's 2016 campaign and Russia. CBS's Catherine Herridge.
Almost 4 years to the day since he started his investigation, Special Counsel John Durham says the FBI used unverified information when it opened the investigation into candidate Trump's alleged ties to Russia in 2016. Durham concludes senior FBI personnel displayed a serious lack of analytical rigor and relied on investigative leads provided or funded by Trump's political opponents.
At least six people are dead and many more unaccounted for after a hostel fire in New Zealand. Reporter Scott Maiman.
The blaze broke out in the early morning at a high-rise building in the New Zealand capital, Wellington. Fire crews challenged by the size of the blaze.
Put their own lives at risk to make sure that they get as many people out of there to safety as possible.
Fire Commander Nikki Pyatt.
They had to make critical decisions.
The search for more victims is underway. Authorities are investigating if the fire was deliberately lit. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Canberra, Australia.
This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win. Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson & Watts, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Watts. GTWLawyers.com.
Democracy doesn't have to be boring. Founded by revolutionary German exiles in 1853, the Milwaukee Turners at Turner Hall offer gymnastics, rock climbing, yoga, meaningful forums, training, and countless ways to have fun and matter to Milwaukee. Whether you hang upside down or hang out, they've got you covered. Membership is only $35 a year. Be a part of Milwaukee's past, present, and future. Visit them at MilwaukeeTurners.org. That's MilwaukeeTurners.org. Or find them on Facebook or Instagram.
This is Mike Moen from Wisconsin News Connection. You may have heard my stories on Civic Media. Wisconsin News Connection is surveying listeners to learn how to better report on issues important to you. Go to WISNewsSurvey.com, fill it out, and you'll be entered to win a $50 Target gift card. Once again, WISNewsSurvey.com to help improve the news and enter to win a $50 Target gift card. Thanks, and we look forward to your response at WISNewsSurvey.com.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day million-dollar advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship. Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to Hot Gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us. Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Are highly inflated, and then people like me who have really good health insurance, we get to pay a lower negotiated rate, whereas the uninsured and people who have crummy insurance don't. And look, I agree with that. And this is where what's interesting to me is the Pioneer Institute, as I understand, and we're going to find out in a second, is a free market think tank, a conservative right-wing think tank, but we'll argue about that later. And that's why I've asked William Smith to come talk with us. Bill is a senior fellow there at the free market think tank, the Pioneer Institute in Boston. He's also the author of Drug Pricing 101. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Am I getting this right? The argument is that these drug companies, they list their price kind of like MSRP, and then because certain groups have more power than others to negotiate lower prices, they get them, and the people with less power get screwed. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of what payola going on. You remember when the DJs used to get money for every time they played a record? There's a lot of that going on in the drug world where drug companies pay money to health insurance companies to prefer their drugs. And that comes in the form of discounts and rebates and all these fees and all these complicated things. But basically, the big health insurance companies can negotiate very, very cheap prices. Sometimes they'll take 50% off the sticker price for a drug in the negotiations. And the problem is not bad. It's not bad for the health insurance companies. It's not necessarily bad for the drug companies who get their drug preferred by a health plan and make more money. What the people that end up getting screwed are people that are paying cash or in a high deductible health insurance plan. They don't get the negotiated rate. So if a drug is $100 and the health insurance company is only paying $50, when they go into a pharmacy and they're meeting their deductible, they're paying out of their pocket, they have to pay the full $100. They don't get those discounts. And that's really problematic.
But you know, here's the thing. As a free market think tank, shouldn't that be – that's the free market. That's what happens. They've got the power to set the prices. They've said this is what the prices are. And then they've made another agreement to say, well, for you, because you're special, we're going to give you a better deal. Isn't that what you guys kind of advocate for?
I'm not a free market ideologue, and I think that the Pioneer Institute is kind of more a centrist think tank. We couldn't survive as a right-wing think tank in Massachusetts. Let's just put it that way. They'd burn us down. So, you know, we have to be sort of centrist. And I, you know, what I'm critical of is insurance company benefit design. Yeah, you know, they're making people pay a lot more out of their pockets so they can keep premiums low for the healthy people that don't need a cancer drug or don't need a drug for their MS. And I even as a free market person, I'm not in favor of that.
Yeah, see, what I was trying to do here, Bill, is I was trying to put you on the right and me over here somewhere so that we could come together and go, there's we could agree on something. Because in this country, we can't seem to agree on stuff, Bill. So this seemed like something that was so outrageous, so egregious, that even, you know, a right-wing think tank and me, we could agree. We could, and it sounds like you're killing that on me, Bill.
No, I'm not killing it on you. I'm agreeing with you. We are finding common ground here that patients for unfortunate reasons get cancer and they get prescribed $100,000 cancer drug, and that may be only 0.5% of patients. They shouldn't have to take $5,000 or $10,000 out of their pocket. That's what insurance is for.
Right.
It's in those unlikely, terrible situations where you get a bad diagnosis and you need the insurance to kick in. What's happening more and more is the insurance is kicking in less and less. They're making people pay more and more out of pocket, particularly for expensive drugs for these difficult to treat diseases like arthritis and cancer and multiple sclerosis and cystic fibrosis. You can go down the list,
right,
where people are paying a huge sums out of their pocket.
And Medicare doesn't get to negotiate for all the drugs. There's a couple I know that they're moving towards, but the fact that one of the largest buyers of drugs doesn't get to negotiate is insane to me. So you, as a free market think tank, what is the solution then? Because we agree, this is screwed up. There's something seriously wrong. Working people, especially the working poor, are getting screwed over. What do you guys advocate for?
Well, policymakers ought to look at insurance benefit design, and they should try to rein in the out-of-pocket costs that people are being charged. You know, and they're being charged it because the insurance companies report to the employer that's hired them and say, we can keep premiums low if we keep these out-of-pocket costs high. I think that's a problematic policy. I think, you know, a person should have skin in the game and have to pay $100 if they get an expensive drug and the insurance company's paying for it. But $5,000, $7,000, should they be paying that each time they get prescribed an expensive drug? I have a problem with that.
No, I have a problem with it as well. But, you know, here's my problem. I look at, I don't know if you know who Wendell Potter is. He was a former Cigna VP. In his Substack page, he just reported that the seven major insurers used $141 billion to buy stocks back over the last several years. You've got between 2012 and 2021, you've got this economics professor from UMass and a researcher from Brown saying that the pharmaceutical companies bought $747 billion in stocks back. We're talking about almost $1 trillion in stock buybacks. Basically, what it's telling me is these industries have no use, no productive use for this money other than to put back into their pockets. So for me, it seems like there's a lot of money to be had there to lower the cost of healthcare and to lower the cost of prescription drugs. We just choose to ensure that the profits that these companies make are sacrosanct. And those of us footing the bill, we're the ones getting screwed.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of unfairness in the U.S. healthcare system. There's no doubt about that. I can agree on that point. But, you know, if you look to other countries that spend less on healthcare and less on prescription drugs, even their people have less access to the best drugs. So, you know, in the U.S., when a new drug is approved, 90% of people get access to it in 3 months. And in places like Canada or Great Britain, when a new drug is approved, people have to wait years before, and sometimes they don't even get access to it at all. And that cuts costs, admittedly, but it also it degrades quality.
Yeah, but these new drugs of which you talk, they are outrageously expensive. And again, yeah, back to your point, the insurance company is going to pay some of them, but for those who are underinsured or uninsured, they might as well not be getting access to them because they can't afford them.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt there's some sticker shock coming in prescription drugs. But what's happening, Rick, is that the science is changing and we're understanding a lot more about genetics. And so they're creating more and more drugs for specific small populations. So lung cancer is not lung cancer. everybody used to get just chemo and radiation for lung cancer. Right. Now there are about five different types of lung cancer, and they know what types based on their genes, people's genes, and they know what therapies work with that particular person. So when you have a smaller number of customers, the drugs are always going to be more expensive than if you make a pill for 10 million people with high blood pressure. And so what's happening is there are more and more of these special drugs for rare diseases coming online, and their sticker prices are higher. Now, I'm not going to cry for insurance companies, because they save a lot of money when patents expire on drugs and the drugs go generic and the price drops 95%. And over the last 5 years, we've had $82 billion in savings that have come just from patent expirations. So those patent expirations are helping make room for these insurance companies to pay for the more expensive niche rare disease drugs. But there's no doubt it's a problem if you don't have insurance, because if you get a certain type of lung cancer and your drug is going to be $250,000 and you don't have insurance, you're in trouble.
So some of my friends on the left would say this is why we need, standardized medicine, health insurance for everyone, a Medicare for all kind of scenario, or at least to strengthen the ACA so that everyone has a baseline of insurance so that they're not exposed to this kind of risk. And look, I'm of the mindset that insurance seems pretty simple. One giant pool makes a lot of sense to me because you mitigate risk across a larger pool. I know free market ideology probably going to be against this, but what are your thoughts?
Well, again, I don't morally condemn people who take that position, because I think there is a lot of unfairness in the U.S. healthcare system that comes out in many stories that we hear. On the other hand, I do study for a living some of the nationalized healthcare systems in Great Britain and in Europe, and they're brutal about limiting people's access to high technology treatments, high technology surgeries, high technology drugs. You know, if you get sick in Great Britain or Canada, my advice is to come to the U.S. because you're going to get better quality treatment in the U.S. So it's a trade-off.
If you can afford it, and look, I'm not talking about government-run hospitals and government-hired doctors, and not like we have for our military veterans. I would never for the mass of the public have a TRICARE system for everybody, but just an insurance pool. It seems like a lot of efficiencies could be done by having one simple form, one insurance company, I don't care if it's public or private. It just seems like having all of these different ones who the profit motives seem to be more important than the competition, because it doesn't seem like we're doing the competition thing, Bill. I'm missing the competition.
There's no doubt there's merit in your argument, because a bigger pool like that gets rid of the adverse selection problem, right? Insurance companies want to get sick people out of their plans, and they actually figure out tactics to make sure they don't enroll sick people. And that's problematic, because the sick people are the ones that need the insurance, right? But if you have a big pool where everybody has to be in it, that solves that problem. But it creates other problems also. And as I said, the biggest problem is the government ends up rationing to control costs, because everyone's going to want to use this insurance aggressively to control costs. They limit access to different therapies.
But aren't we already doing that? Isn't this what we're talking about right now? Isn't this rationing? The fact that I can't afford it. I don't have the money, Bill. I'm underinsured. I can't afford the $5,000 deductible. I can't afford the medical, the medicine. Aren't we rationing just on who can afford it and who can't?
We are. But on the other hand, most Americans get access to the best drugs and the best surgeries. And if you go down the rationing path, you're going to be in a situation where that's not going to be the case.
So walk me through what we should be doing. Give me an action right now that you and I can agree on, that our listeners can go, hey, tomorrow, this is what we're going to push, because it's patently unfair what's happening to our neighbors and our friends. How do we fix this? How do we right this wrong, Bill?
So state officials that regulate health insurance plans should be looking at out-of-pocket costs, and they should be saying pocket costs over a certain amount or over a certain percentage, maybe even based on income. I don't know. I haven't thought it through this carefully. I'm not an insurance guy. But they have to limit the amount of, like, the federal government limits the amount of out-of-pocket costs for high deductible plans to $7,000.
Yeah, now, but who's got $7,000, Bill?
I know. That's. I think it should be lower than that. But you know, you'd have to carefully look at how much it's going to cost in premiums. And but I think there's a reasonable way to change insurance benefit design through policy that would make it easier for people to afford their drugs or surgeries, or God forbid they get sick.
And this in this day and age, God forbid you get sick is exactly right, Bill. I've got the best health insurance money can buy. My union negotiates the best benefits I can get. I pay through the nose for it, about 20 grand a year. But I get all this stuff, and I'm very fortunate. I want that for everyone, Bill. I want to make sure that everyone has the ability in the moment that they have tragedy hit, that they get sick, that something bad happens, that the last thing they're thinking about is, can I afford this? And they're concentrating on how to get better. That to me is something that's the North Star for me.
No, we don't disagree on that. You know, I think people should have good insurance. That's the purpose of insurance. And people increasingly have crappy insurance. That's a problem. It used to be that commercial companies would have some of the best insurance because they wanted to, you know, it's a benefit. It's like the salaries they're paying their employees. They wanted to have good drug formularies that would cover most of the drugs. They'd want to have low copays and low out-of-pocket costs. I tell you, for whatever reason, that's changing. And
well, it's greed. I mean, like, you know, almost $1 trillion in stock buybacks, Bill. Come on. This is the ticket. I'm just a dumb truck driver, and I've looked at this and gone, outrageous, obscene kinds of money, because we were told, give them all these tax breaks, do all this stuff so that they can use this money to get us better drugs, and yet they're saying, hey, we got $1 trillion that we don't know what to do with. So let's just buy our stocks back. That's how I read it. So we agree that better insurance is something everyone should have. So how do we get to that point? How do we ensure that? Do we do that through government policy? Do we do that through the goodness of corporations' heart? Will there be a benevolent insurance company that says, we bestow this on you? Where do you see this? I'm as a union guy, I'm like, hey, union should be fighting for better health care, because every union guy I know has got good health care. What should we be doing?
Well, you know, you can certainly do it through legislation and through hard policy and impose it on people. But there are other things that you can be doing. I know that there's a patient advocacy group that I know that kind of give out a list of rewards to companies that provide the lowest out-of-pocket costs to their employees. And they reward them, and it's like they get the good housekeeping seal of approval. And, you know, I think we should be stigmatizing companies that are not doing the right thing via their employees. But, you know, I'd be willing to consider even legislation and other hard policy changes.
Wow, that's got to be hard for you. I'm sorry, but everyone that I know who's in a free market think tank, they all say the same thing. You know, government no, government bad. Let the market decide. I was expecting a much different response.
No, well, I'm not loved by the insurance companies, that's for sure. but I think people getting good health care is more important than being loved by the insurance companies. And I just I've seen it too many times where people there's a great breakthrough medicine that happens for some kind of rare cancer and people can't afford it. And they have insurance, and they should be able to afford it if they have insurance.
No, especially since our tax dollars spend a lot of tax money on subsidizing the development of these drugs. Our university system spends a lot of time and effort and opportunity doing this stuff. The benefit should trickle down, shouldn't it?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, one of the worst offenders is Medicare. People in Medicare Part D, where they get their drugs through the Medicare program, pay the highest out-of-pocket costs.
Bad, horrible legislation.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are things that can be done. The good news, Rick, is that this is a small percentage of the population, like 1-2% of the population find themselves in a situation where they're prescribed a really expensive drug because they have a really serious condition. And, you know, that's when it's only 1-2%, it's a solvable problem. Right.
And I must know a lot of people who drug prices are killing them, because, you know, I know a lot of people who they're struggling at the end of every month. So we've got a lot of work to do. But, Bill, I appreciate the conversation. Good stuff. I hope folks will take a look at the book, Drug Pricing 101, written by William Smith, and check out the Pioneer Institute for your latest free market stuff. Bill, thanks so much. I appreciate the time.
You bet, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts. How does this work for you? Are you in the world of the drug prices are killing me? I want to hear it. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Oh, boy. Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. That's all I can say. Rudy, Rudy. What? Rudy. Rudy. What? Rudy. I don't know if you saw the story. Evidently, Rudy. Rudy's getting sued. Rudy Giuliani, Trump's attorney. I guess Trump fired him. Evidently, this lawsuit that has been filed, 70-page lawsuit filed by the person who was his former director of business development. I don't know what that means. Is accusing him of rape, sexual harassment, abuse of power, wage theft, and other misconduct while she served as his underling. And he was Trump's personal lawyer. Evidently, the story goes like this. Giuliani hired her for the whopping salary of $1 million a year plus expenses. And then only paid her 12 grand. Over 2 years. That is literally the most Trumpian thing that I've heard all day. But even more than this, forced. I don't know if I can say this on air, but evidently Rudy wanted to feel like Bill Clinton. That's a direct quote. So, you know, let your mind go where that goes. He wanted her. He demanded that she either was naked while she was at work, wears a bikini, or flag short shorts. Flag short shorts. She also, you know, talks about how in this 70 pages, how he would regularly spout off confused and hostile alcohol-laced tirades, usually homophobic and racist. Surprise, surprise. And here's the thing. This is the part that's really, she says she has tapes. Yep. The lawsuit states he made clear that satisfying his sexual demands, which came virtually anytime, anywhere, was an absolute requirement of her employment and his legal representation. Giuliani began requiring Miss Blank to work at his home or out of a hotel room so that she would be at his beck and call. He drank morning, noon, and night and was frequently intoxicated, and therefore his behavior was always unpredictable. Evidently, Rudy, who's supposed to be a good lawyer, is going to represent himself. Now, understand, this woman has something like 23,000 emails and tapes. Did I mention she's got tapes? Evidently, there are tapes of him talking badly about other political figures, lots of sexual comments. Margaret Thatcher, I want to hear those. What possibly could he be talking about sexually about Margaret Thatcher? But evidently, according to her, he constantly took Viagra and demanded that she take care of his, Viagra. Here's the kicker. This is the most conservative part yet. He thought of her as his daughter. Let that sink in as he was pushing bondage and sadomasochism. Yeah, it's his daughter. Quick break, please. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day of the founding of the Library Employees Union of Greater New York. This was the first public library workers' union in the United States. From its beginning, one of the key efforts of the union was the fight for equal rights for women and men in the library field. Maud Malone was one of the leading spokeswomen for the union. She was also an active supporter of the campaign for women to win the right to vote. The union leaders worked to build relationships with other women's rights organizations. According to a report on the first 2 years of the union's activities, the union arose out of the need to remedy the particularly bad working conditions and wages of librarians, especially in the public libraries of the city. The union wanted to improve the promotion system, especially for women. In order to strengthen their cause, the union leaders corresponded with libraries as far away as England, France, Australia, Africa, and South America. These exchanges centered on discussing the library question from the union point of view. Promoting the union point of view to library workers proved to be a tough task. The union tried to convince library employees to think of themselves as workers and part of the working class. The union advocated for library employees to be included as part of the city's civil service system. But many of these workers thought of themselves as professionals. And in the end, this hesitancy to buy into the idea of unionization led to the downfall of the Library Employees Union, which ended its efforts in 1929. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
There's a common political refrain among Texas progressives. Thank God for Mississippi. Our own state government, run by corporate lobbyists and right-wing nutballs, is a notorious hellhole for efforts to provide even a little more fairness for the poor, the working class, and the environment. So, Lone Star Progressives need some straw to grasp to keep from tumbling into the ditch of total despair. Mississippi has been that straw. No matter how mingy our state officials are, Texans can count on the Magnolia State to be one digit worse. But have mercy! Texans are suddenly in danger of losing our reputational buffer, for Mississippi is close to making a momentous upgrade this election year. An unabashed working-class Democrat with a program of For the People reforms and an anti-plutocrat campaign for governor has already pulled even with a right-wing incumbent. Brandon Presley is the upstart's name. A little-D Democratic populist elected at 23 years old to be mayor of his small hometown where he still lives, he's now in his fourth term as a highly effective, widely popular member of the State Utility Commission. There, he has successfully battled the electric power giants and telecom profiteers on behalf of everyday ratepayers, workers, and the environment. Presley, who actually is an Elvis cousin, is not a pure liberal. He's pro-gun and anti-choice. But this is Mississippi, and while it's essential to strive for the pure light of liberalism, a multiracial majority of workaday Mississippians see Presley as a pure champion of basics they've long been denied, from health care to voting rights. So they're rallying for change. After all, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. This is Jim Hightower saying, the people of Mississippi know they're being kicked by the moneyed powers. And Brandon Presley is saying, let's kick back. To learn more, go to brandonpresley.com. We'll be right back.
back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, the CNN experiment failed badly. They put Trump on. They had 3.3 million viewers for his town hall of hilarity. And look, it was fun to watch. I got to be honest. I like watching Trump be Trump. I just don't want him to be president. But evidently, from that 3.3 million peak of the Trump stuff, they have now fallen to fourth among cable news behind the MAGA channel Newsmax, who evidently is getting less than 100,000 views nightly. That ain't good for CNN. They thought they're going to roll the dice, go a little right, wing. It doesn't seem to be working. Does not seem to be working. Anyway, lots of fun and entertainment today. And that's why I've asked my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Now, what did Tom Cruise say in the movie, Show Me the Money, right? They made some money off the ads, you know. Okay.
Long term, long game, though. Long game. Well, not going to be good. Not going to be good for them.
Okay, but let's throw this out here. And don't go Biden or Harris for a second. Okay, they had Trump on. Who's somebody else they could put on to generate controversy? Who else?
Oh, you're going to go after Green. You're going to go after, you know, some of the other.
You could have Green on. Wow.
I don't think any of the other people are going to generate that kind of.
No, they aren't. I just was, because maybe now they go RFK. How about that? RFK Jr. You know?
Yeah, but he's not going to draw people.
Nothing. Just saying, if you're CNN's board, you got to be throwing the next name out there.
And there isn't one. I mean, that's the thing. Trump is entertaining. I mean, to be honest, you know, set the politics aside. He was a giant a-hole to that woman. And people like to see that. They saw the apprentice guy on there doing what he does. You're fired. You're nasty. You know, all of that stuff. And that some people find that interesting and entertaining. It's funny to watch. I don't want that guy as president.
Did you see that article? I don't know. I'm sure you did. About his staff, I put in my news notes on purpose, and I used the example of the Shah of Iran. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
His staff was back there going, look at this poll. Okay, come on now. Come on. Look in the mirror. Hey, they were literally doing, well, not the look in the mirror part, but they were, here's your poll. Remember this. And they were doing that.
Yeah, you got to stoke his ego, man. Because someone was asking me today who I thought his VP choice was going to be. Is it going to be Kerry Lake? And I'm like, no. I don't think there's any way he takes Kerry Lake because she's going to take shine from him. He's going to go for someone like Pence, who is definitely not going to infringe on his star. They're going to take, there's going to be nobody going to see the VP. Trump wants to be the center of attention. I don't think he pulls somebody who could possibly take anything from him.
Yeah, well, and they didn't hang Pence, so he could still take him.
He's not going to take Pence. That ain't going to happen.
What could be the slogan? You didn't hang him, so I want him. Something like that.
There you go. Maybe that's it.
We could do some scripts for this. And sell them to TV.
Without question, we should work on this. I got to get your thoughts on this Giuliani thing, though. Did you see that Giuliani's being sued?
Right.
The part of the thing that catches my attention is, you know, all of the gross stuff aside, you know, we all saw the Sacha Baron Cohen movie, you know, Rudy laying on the bed, taking his pants off.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, as this story is coming out, they're talking about all of the just really outrageous, over the top kind of things he's doing. But then the punchline being he thought of this woman as his daughter, which was really freaking creepy to me.
Right. Right. She's suing him for the sexual assault, and then they had it was $10 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, she wants back wages and all kinds of stuff.
No dumpy and you know, any of these suits, any of them, when they first come out, I always have a bit of skepticism. You know, I thought. They jumped on the Minnesota senator too fast. He wanted to be investigated at the time, Al Franken, right?
Yep.
And I thought that was not fair. But on Giuliani's case, after I watched that Sacha Baron thing,
yep.
You don't go in a hotel and then lay on the bed and you're tucking your shirt in. You don't do it. I mean, you don't. Yeah, he did. No,
see, here's the thing. My general rule of thumb is I'll believe it when you put it in writing in front of a judge.
Yeah.
When you're standing in front of that person with a robe on, putting your hand on that book, saying, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. And under the threat of, you know, punishment for perjury. I'll take more of that. So this, you know, I don't think this is, you know, the end of the world, smoking gun stuff, but I do find it interesting.
Well, he's to the end of his career. She said that he promised to pay her $1 million and represent her for free, you know, legal services when she needed something about, I don't know, domestic abuse or something of that nature. And if this were one of those cases that you're innocent, but you want to get rid of it, and so, you know, you'll pay $75,000. I mean, this happens.
Yeah.
But you're committing to $1 million a year? No. You definitely did something. But Giuliani, I'll tell you, when he went down, you know, he was the America's mayor.
Well, evidently that was her.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to feel like Bill Clinton.
Well, that's true. That's true. So his defense is going to be what is. Or he'll mess it up. He'll say something else. What is was, but he represented the Mujahideen cult when he set up lobbying, and John Bolton was doing work for them, and they were on the at that time. They aren't now. They were on the official terrorist list. That day was the first time in my mind years back. I thought this guy is, you know, it's money.
Yep.
You don't come out of New York City and represent somebody on the official terrorist list at the time. Again, they aren't now. So, I don't know. He just has been going downhill a long time, and how he won't get some type of penalty in Georgia will be beyond me.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for that to come out, especially with the fake electors and all that. But I also got to get your thought of the big news story of the day. It was supposed to be the, you know, the migrants at the border, and but that petered out. Now it's the Durham report. Everybody, all the right-wing outlets are, you know, losing their mind over this 316-page Durham report that, you know, it's evidently this is the smoking gun, Bob. A smoking gun. They've got, it's all there. It's all there except any, you know, actual things.
Right. The special prosecutor, of course, found that the FBI rushed into its investigation between Trump and Russia ties, you know, 2016. And that, now this part is the one that got me, where his report said they relied too much on raw and unconfirmed intelligence. Okay. They came after me for getting a boat from the Shah of Iran's daughter, who was dead in Paris of a drug overdose.
Right.
So do I believe the Justice Department can act on raw and unconfirmed knowledge? You bet.
Yeah.
I personally do. But so that part, you know, that's the government. And so, yes, that happens. But the conclusion falls short, you know, because there's no recommendations in there for charges.
No, I mean, that's the thing that gets me. You went through all this, we spent all this money, and nothing. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, I kind of likened it to the Mueller report. There are all these things, all these things that Trump did. We know 112, you know, connections between, you know, his campaign and the Russians, but, you know, there was no there. There was no take it to the judge. There was no, hey, we should file something. Nothing. Now, I find it interesting that, you know, depending on where you get your news, this is either the smoking gun that's going to bring Obama down and Biden, of course, with him, or, you know, on the left, it's a giant nothing burger because there's nothing here. Now, I'm somewhere a little bit closer to the, you know, a little bit middle, because they do talk about FISA and some of the abuses that, you know, I was concerned about when we were using it against the people, you know, wearing the turbans. But it wasn't popular then to talk about that. I do think there's some problems with that.
Oh, I think there are. Of course, I just kind of love this. They do this probe. I want the big probe. I want the bring me the six people that lied to us.
That's what Rudy wanted.
I'm still. I want that one. You know.
I shouldn't have. That was a cheap shot.
Right.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have jumped into that. No,
well,
I mean,
Rudy is definitely subject for these shots. Now, the problem with Rudy, he's not going to remember half of what any of us say. So.
he'll slur something later. No, but you know, so do you see this? Is this going to go anywhere? This Durham report, does this matter? I mean, outside of right wing talk radio, you know, who's going to bloviate on this for the next couple of days and rile people up? This is going nowhere. I mean, Josh Hawley said that we need to break up the FBI, which, you know, I don't want to defend the FBI because I remember them, you know, putting people at bake sales when we were, you know, when they were anti-war folks. I mean, the FBI does some things that I'm not thrilled with either, but, you know, break them up. I'm kind of not with him.
I mean, look, if internal investigations are done by the government, Department of Justice, et cetera, they usually absolutely end up nowhere because it's the fox in the hen house. And there was a horrible case in Cleveland where they set up these poor people. They photoshopped pictures. These people went to prison. One of them was in prison with me. In fact, I saw the night when the emergency call came from D.C. to tell him, let him grab his stuff. His family's coming from Cleveland to get him. That put him out within an hour out of the prison. And they went after a DEA agent, but it took actually a lawyer friend of mine, and they, you know, everybody got together and went after that DEA. But it practically took an act of the Lord to get that agent, right? Because it's internal. Now, when you take something like Durham and you have outside reports of agencies, that's when heads fly normally. And heads didn't fly.
Yeah, nothing.
So trust me, if there was something there that was chargeable, Durham would go to town on it. So this will, you know, this will come and go. It just shows that, you know, they act on raw information. They do this, they do that. I mean, we kind of all knew that anyway.
Yeah, but here again, I come back to my, you know, depending on where you get your news. This is the weird part of this. There's nowhere saying just what you said. I mean, because I agree with you. It's either, oh my God, hair on fire. It's, you know, it's the greatest thing. We're going to get them. Or it's, you know, people, you know, ignoring it.
Well, plus the time is, look, everybody's kind of over Russia, kind of over, you know, stolen elections for the most part. I know there's people who still care, but people are over a lot. And so what's going to take precedence? A lot of local issues. You know, are we going to tumble the stock market down below the pavement, you know, with the default and what inflation, what are gas prices going to be, you know, things like that. But in a way, if the right keeps pursuing this, and maybe for the Democratic side, they should hope that they run ads on this, then it takes away other issues that they could actually attack on.
Yeah, good point. And Janet Yellen is saying that June 1st is the drop dead date. That's the date, and she's not backing off of it.
Right. She. It's very interesting. I've been kind of watching this. She's basically letting, you know, the president's becoming the negotiator, which is interesting. And the reason I say that, usually in those positions like Yellen has, they'll kind of try to do a double play here where her negotiators meet with Senate and House negotiators, you know. But it's been the president, so that allows her basically to kind of focus strictly on what to do, not what to negotiate, if that makes sense. Because she's going to be the what-to-do person around, whether it's June 1st or it takes four more days or whatever it takes, she's going to be the what-to-do person.
Yeah, or maybe she just said, hey, I don't want any part of that. It's not my job to negotiate. It's my job to do. Who knows?
To do.
Who knows where this goes? I want to get your thoughts on, you said a moment ago that people are over stolen elections. I don't know if you saw Trump on CNN. Definitely not over. I saw this story over at Bloomberg, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it because you are on the record and very clear he's not going to be the nominee, not going to go to the convention. But evidently, according to Bloomberg, rule changes that were made, you know, during the Trump years and by Trump and his camp evidently are going to make it easier for him to win the nomination because evidently it's a winner-take-all scenario as where before it wasn't on state delegates. Is that... Do you know what they're talking about?
Yes, because eventually, in the process, and this is what makes him a, you know, have an easier path to the nomination, because it used to be when I went to Kansas City, for example, in 1976, I was directly picked by the governor himself for me to go, and I was an at-large delegate. And so what happens is you have X amount of at-large delegates, and then you have maybe four or five delegates that were for Reagan, let's say, all right? So at the final roll call, some of those delegates could yield and turn to Reagan, but they could remain with Reagan and then the count's there. On this one, they have a state-take-all rule where, if you get, for example, a state, let's say you had 35 delegates and somebody else or the rest of them have, 33 or whatever. Well, then that state converts to a total of 60-some delegates for Donald Trump. Even though if you let the process play out, it might have a different effect. So it made him an easier path for the nomination. Doesn't mean an easier path for a win, but in the general, but...
No. And Sununu, said that. Did you see Sununu's interview with Jen Psaki?
No.
Where he came out and said, look, Trump's a loser. Trump's a loser. He lost here. He lost here. He lost the Congress. He lost this. He's a loser. He's not going to win in the general election. He may win the primary. He's not going to win in the general. He's a loser. And I was like, wow, someone's finally saying it. Sununu's not going to win. But I'm more afraid of him, honestly, than I am of Trump, because I think there's a whole bunch of other scenarios. But I thought it was interesting that some of the attacks are bleeding in.
Right. Even if Trump took over the party, he wrote these delegate rules just in case, the number one winner on these rules, they take it all. So if people are trying to keep Trump, like Sununu, out of the process, if he gets into the convention, then it's wired for him. I've always said this, as since last February, that he won't be in the convention.
Right.
Now, I've also been asked, what do you mean? I said, if he's in the convention, he's the nominee.
Right.
Let me make that crystal clear. I'm not nuts. He goes in that convention, he is the nominee. I just don't think at the end, I've got one of these guts, it's just something's going to happen, and he's not going to make it.
I'm hoping.
But if he gets in, it's done.
There's part of me that hopes you're right, but I think in order for the country to heal, he has to be soundly defeated at the polls to end the whole thing. There's the part of me that wants him to stand for election, and the hope is that he's soundly defeated. My problem with that is he could win.
Well, a couple of things, and actually I quoted you to a friend the other day. A friend of mine, I said, you ought to listen to Rick's show. He's a Democratic friend. He's like, it's so done, Bob. Oh my goodness, it's not even going to be close. I said, you don't believe me. Why don't you listen to Rick Smith? Because, he could win. Biden could win. He could win. And anybody who thinks that he can't, he could. So it's going to be an interesting scenario. I'm taking it basically kind of from the point of view that his ego, deep down, when nobody's around, nobody's watching him, nobody's listening to him, he's got to be sitting there going, I could lose this thing. Now, you can claim fraud twice. You and I know the next election is going to be so watched, scrutinized, and everything else under the sun.
Yeah.
So I'm arguing the ego is going to kick in. He doesn't want the potential. If in his gut he feels he's not going to make it, you don't use it was stolen the second time in history.
Yeah. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on the dumbest guy in the Senate, Tommy Tuberville. Evidently, Tim, I shouldn't say that.
Is he the dumbest for sure?
I gotta think he's the dumbest. Or at least I hope. Evidently, he's angry at the Pentagon for forcing troops to read liberal books, for providing abortion, and for driving out white nationalists. He's very angry about this, Bob.
Wow.
Or at least that's what he was quoted as saying.
Wow. You know, is he married to, he's not married to Marjorie Three Names, is he? Okay. I didn't know what my history was there.
I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up.
Wow. You know, you can take the abortion issue and say they're trying to force abortion thoughts on it. Okay, and yeah, all right. You can listen to that and people can think something. The book thing, it's just a little bit too much burn the book, all right? But you can use one example of a book everybody hates or something. The white nationalist thing, that's a non-starter. That's just, if you're in the United States Congress, it is a non-starter.
Well, he is the senator from Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah, well, there you go.
More bizarre every day.
It does. You can't, as you've said to me a million times, you couldn't write this script and take it to anyone to produce.
No.
No one.
We would be laughed out of every office in Hollywood had we went 4 or 5 years ago and said, look, here's our scenario, starting with Trump coming down the steps. Okay, you two clowns, go back to Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Yeah, go do something.
Right.
Crazy stuff. But, Bob, I appreciate the time, as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Look, I know a lot of my friends on the left say, no, he can't win. I wish I was so certain. Back after this.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickssmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Quick couple of things to wrap things up today. Evidently, Elon Musk has been subpoenaed in the U.S. Virgin Islands seeking documents that the government there is suing. The U.S. Virgin Islands, evidently, they're suing J.P. Morgan Chase over sex trafficking because of Jeffrey Epstein, a longtime J.P. Morgan Chase customer. Evidently, they're claiming some of the funding went through. This is a novel way to go after these big banksters for this. And I'm going, you know, Elon, I don't know that Elon's name has been tagged to the Epstein Island. I gotta wonder what the Twitter maniacs are going to think about that. Interesting times. And also, thank you, Texas. Evidently, a guy in Texas didn't want his girlfriend to get an abortion, so he killed her, shot her in the head. So he evidently did the abortion. Now here's the weird part of this. They've got it on tape. Evidently, you know, she shrugs him off and, you know, hey, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing best for me. They walked a little bit and he just pulled out a gun and shot her in the head. She hits the ground, he shoots her more, and then he runs away. Now my mind, and this is how screwed up we are. It's on tape. It's right there. My mind goes to this place. It's Texas. Gun fetish, abortion fetish. Does he get off? I know, not the other thing. But does he get away with this? Justifiable homicide. He was protecting a life. I mean, I don't know. It's Texas. How crazy could this be? Now, evidently, you know, at the time of the shooting, this guy was charged with assault of a family member. Evidently, he choked this woman. So violence against women, not something that should be shocking. And I know my liberal friends are going to go, see, this is why you shouldn't have had a gun. And I got to be honest, I can't argue with that. You know, it's one of those things. You beat up a woman,
I don't know. I know it's my right. Crazy times we live in, folks. Crazy, crazy times. Want to hear your thoughts. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.